This is what democracy looks like.
Welcome to Generation Justice, broadcasting from the University of New Mexico, 89.9 KUNM and KUNM.org. I'm your host, Danny Kestner.
And I'm your co-host, Maya Quinones. Generation Justice is a multimedia project helping youth create media that inspires social change.
On September 21st, 2014, the world marched. Over 600,000 people from 160 countries around the world joined in the People's Climate March to demand immediate action on climate change.
More than 1,500 different organizations worked to spread the word, making this the largest climate change protest ever.
In New York City alone, close to 400,000 people marched in solidarity to say, "The time is now."
The goal of the People's Climate March was to get the 120 world leaders who attended the UN Summit on Climate Change to hear what the people called for. The people called to take initiative to lower greenhouse gas emissions and to start reversing the consequences of global warming.
Tonight, we are joined by activists Monica Cordova, Javier Benavides, and Michael Leon Guerrero, who attended the march in New York.
Also, Generation Justice New York correspondent Luna Olavarria Gallegos attended the march. She brings us the voices of people on the street and what they have to say about why we need to address climate change.
We are very excited about this show tonight, and Jaslyn Mendoza, our music host, has selected some special tunes throughout the evening.
They paved paradise, put up a parking lot with a pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging hot spot.
Hello, I'm Gisley Mendoza, and the song you just heard was Big Yellow Taxi by Joni Mitchell. My favorite lyric is, "You don't know what you got until it's gone." I like this because we take the world for granted, and we are destroying it.
Many of us wish we could have attended the climate march, so we are happy to talk with three New Mexicans who experienced it firsthand: Monica Cordova, Michael Leon Guerrero, and Javier Benavides.
Michael Leon Guerrero is the national coordinator at Our Power Campaign with Climate Justice Alliance.
Monica Cordova is the program director for Funders Collaborative on Youth Organizing.
And Javier Benavides is the executive director at the Southwest Organizing Project.
Here they are with Generation Justice's Polly DeNeclaw.
This is Polly DeNeclaw, and I'm sitting here with Michael Leon Guerrero, Javier Benavides, and Monica Cordova. Welcome to Generation Justice. I'm so glad that you guys are here and you took the time out of your day to come and talk with us about the People's Climate March. I really appreciate it.
Thanks,
Polly. Thank you. It's all great to be here.
Would you all like to tell us a little bit more about yourselves? And we'll start with you, Michael.
So I'm Michael Leon Guerrero. I am the national coordinator of the Climate Justice Alliance, Our Power Campaign. So I'm the coordinator of the campaign that's being run by CJA. I am originally from the island of Guam. I'm Pacific Islander, but I lived and worked here for 17 years as a community organizer with the Southwest Organizing Project, primarily doing environmental justice organizing. And more recently, I just started the job with CJA, which represents 40 now organizations around the country that are doing environmental justice work and other work towards building towards the new economy, transitioning from fossil fuels and developing a just transition to what we call local living economies.
Hi, Monica Cordova. I'm now a program director at the Funders Collaborative on Youth Organizing, and we're a part of the program that I really lead is connected to organizations across the country who are working to lift up the voice of young people in issues around wellness, and they have a lot of solutions around what we're talking regarding, you know, localized economies, particularly around food justice, food access. And I'm also a mama. I have a 2- and a 4-year-old.
And Javier?
Thanks, Polly. My name is Javier Benavides. I just started a SWAP about a month ago, and I'm serving in the role of executive director now, which is a real honor because I served as an intern there just about 10 years ago, under Michael, actually. So to get to work with folks who are really deep into the environmental justice work here in New Mexico on the ground, I guess a few of our campaigns right now have to do with taking a stand for with alongside communities who are really impacted by some of these polluting industries.
Can you tell me about the People's Climate March that you all attended last Sunday in New York City? We'll start with Michael.
It was a big, exciting event. Of the estimates are up to 400,000 people that marched through the streets of New York demanding action on climate change by the United Nations, which met a few days later in New York City. The message was that there is a growing movement in the United States, mm-hmm. because the fact is that there's a strong movement around the rest of the world, but we hadn't reflected that here in the United States to show that there's a strong movement. People around the world look at the U.S. and they say, well, you have all these climate deniers that don't even think that climate change is even happening. Mm. And so we had to send a different message that, in fact, there is a strong growing movement that's very diverse on these issues. And I think we were successful in doing that. It is diverse politically also. So there's going to be differences in terms of how we get there. But at least this was a first step in saying that, yes, for us, the debate's over. All of the major scientists and scientific institutions are saying that climate change is happening. It's being caused by emissions that we're creating through industrialization. We're feeling the effects everywhere, whether it's the droughts here in New Mexico, whether it's new, you know, diseases that are expanding in terms of that are affecting crops and vegetation, whether it's the West Antarctic melting now, and they're saying that it may be irreversible, and Greenland's starting to melt. Those are going to have long-term implications. You know, and just to say a little bit about New York and why New York was important, it wasn't just the fact that the United Nations was meeting there 3 days later. It was in the last few months they had Hurricane Sandy, which was had a devastating impact on communities in New York, primarily poor communities that, you know, the housing projects, for instance, in the Rockaways, where people were stranded and trapped. It was just like the same situation in Hurricane Katrina. But I think that was one wake-up call for people to see that that everybody is vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And that and so action does need to be taken right now, because this is just what we're seeing is just the beginning of things to come. And so right now is the time that we have to start reversing the trend.
Yeah, there were at least a few dozen folks from New Mexico representing the state there in New York City. And what was most powerful for me was just to see something different this time around with communities who were affected directly by situations of environmental injustice at the front of the march. And that was very deliberate, I know, by the organizers to highlight people, you know, from everywhere from a coal miner who had, unfortunately, black lung to other communities who've seen, you know, their coastlines arising, and it's affecting their communities in that way. And even New Mexicans who are dealing with, you know, the pollution and the drought and the forest fires, which are all a result of climate change in some way or another.
Monica?
I mean, I would just say that, you know, when you hear 400,000 people, you actually, to really, like, wrap your head around what that really means was, like, intense. And I think I saw somewhere that it was like the march itself stretched over 4 miles. It was just amazing.
Yeah. In fact, when the first part of the march actually reached the end, there were still folks that had not started the march. It was that big. And it was very diverse. That, like I said, there was not just in terms of ethnically, which I think was a really important statement, because there were a number of what we call frontline communities and environmental justice communities. And actually, the fact that they were at the front of the march is really, it's a legacy of years of organizing. But I think that was part of what was for this message, that it has to be a diverse climate movement, mm-hmm. That it can't just be about environmentalists, it can't be climate activists, that it has to be a much broader movement for us to get the action that's necessary to deal with the climate change crisis.
And why do you think diversity is so important to this movement?
First of all, it affects everybody. Second of all, is that for the organization I work with now, it's called the Climate Justice Alliance, and we have a national campaign called the Our Power Campaign. The climate crisis is really a symptom of the economic crisis, and it's a symptom of economic policies that have been going on for 30 or 40 years now, which we call neoliberal policies, or commonly known as neoliberal policies, that deregulate industries, including environmental regulations, worker health and safety, that privatize public services and public infrastructure, and cut taxes on the wealthy and free up and empower corporations. That's been happening for 30, 40 years now, and what that's helped to do is intensify global carbon emissions, because it's intensified industrial production. We've exported industries to places like China and other parts of the global south so that they can pollute more freely. And so that's helped to intensify the amount of carbon that's in the air. So for us to actually change this current situation and address the climate crisis, that means we have to take back some of those things. We have to regulate the emissions from industries. We have to empower communities to develop strong local democracies and economies. We have to basically take the power out of the corporation's hands and put it back into the community's hands.
Yeah, to bring it back to New Mexico, I mean, Michael's talking about an important fight globally, and I think New Mexico, interestingly, is a microcosm of a lot of that fight because, mm-hmm. you know, sadly, we are a resource-rich state with oil and gas and coal, and we export a lot of energy, but the consequences of that are, you know, some pretty dire consequences for a lot of our communities in the form of pollution. And just the sheer like strength of those industries politically at our state legislature and elsewhere, it's daunting. And we see it in the form of the communities surrounding the coal-fired power plants in the northwest, the Four Corners area, breathing worse air than New York City. And kids have some of the highest rates of asthma around there. We already have limited water. We're in the middle of a high desert. And so any threat to our water is a threat to our way of life and generations of farming. And, it's a challenge. And so all this comes into play with climate change. And that's not even mentioning nuclear. We have some major nuclear challenges down in the southeastern part of the state. Fukushima wasn't that long ago. And those are the risks that we're putting to our people. Church Rock is another example. That's from where you're at, Polly, right? That area.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is.
And I would just say, you know, and then we pit the, you know, our communities against each other in relationship to this. So then it becomes, you know, is it, do you want good jobs or do you want a clean environment? Right. So, you know, we do a lot of work around, environmental justice, climate justice, regulations. SWAP has always been, as Michael said, at the forefront of that work. And recently we were, you know, trying to tie in air regulations here locally. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, why are the solutions either, you know, one or the other? Mm-hmm. It's because the priority is profit. The priority isn't our communities. The priority isn't our environment. It's like you can have this or that. And this or that is always crumbs.
And why should New Mexicans care about environmental justice or climate change?
I mentioned earlier, I'm a mama. I have a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old. And as I was, you know, thinking about this interview, I always go back to my grandfather who lived in southern New Mexico in Artesia. It's a huge oil refinery right there. And growing up, you know, he farmed. He had a little farm in his backyard. And the conversations that I had with him around the environment are drastically different than the conversations that I'm going to have with my 2- and 4-year-old about the environment. You know, the conversations about the richness of soil and how do I talk to my kids about fracking? How do I explain to them that they live in a society that, you know, profit is a priority over people? Profit is a priority over the planet. And, you know, from an organizer's perspective, I understand the importance of community members needing to engage here locally in a lot of the fights that Javier mentioned. And as a mama, my heart just like is saddened by the direction that we're going in. And I really hope that folks are moved to take action, you know, everyday folks, because these issues are affecting us more than they are anybody else in our communities.
And like Monica said, if profit over planet continues or pollution of our planet continues, what are the consequences?
One example that we're dealing with right now that I didn't mention is this Santa Luna development on the west side of Albuquerque, which is a great example of, you know, a fringe development being pushed for the sake of like the profits that are going to be reaped off the speculation of that land. And meanwhile, the core of our city is suffering. There's not public transportation that would reduce, you know, the air pollution. There's not a whole lot of emphasis on revitalization or affordable housing, but instead, because of the profit motives of that real estate decision, we're looking at developing a whole new fringe sprawl development. It would have major consequences for traffic in our city, but there's a lot of money to be made. So it's another opportunity for people to be engaged at, you know, the local level on the kind of decisions that are creating these climate situations internationally. There's going to be a hearing on October 1st at 9 o'clock in front of the County Planning Commission. And we're hopeful that I think we'll get a good vote there, but it looks daunting at the County Commission because they're the ones that approved this stuff. But, you know, it's an example of a local decision that contributes to the broader struggle.
As a young person growing up in this environment of profit over people, profit over planet, and just growing up knowing that there's such heavy pollution in our communities, you know, I was taught early on, don't leave the water running, recycle, and all of these different aspects of really trying to help in this effort to not pollute the planet, just because I am a Diné woman. I am indigenous to this land, and it holds, it's very sacred to me, and it's mm-hmm. very much a part of my culture and who I am. And, you know, just before this interview, I was a little bit nervous, and Roberta told me, you know, imagine yourself back at home and your feet touching the earth. And that to me was such a powerful thing because, you know, when I think of where I come from, when I think of my roots, I think of the land. Mm-hmm. And my grandpa and my grandma, they cultivated that land. I mean, our fields are so important to Navajo people that we don't build on them. It doesn't matter if that cornfield hasn't been used for decades. You don't build on that. You have to protect it. You have to honor it, that it fed you, that it, you know, provided you with nourishment so that you could live. Yeah. And that's why this is so important to me mm-hmm. and why, you know, sort of what this means to me. And it was incredibly powerful. Like, I was moved to tears when I heard, I was listening to Democracy Now, and Amy Goodman said, you know, the people at the front of this march are Indigenous people because mm-hmm. they are the people who are most affected. And I was like listening to that, and I was like, this is so powerful and beautiful. And for once, you know, someone's saying, yes, you know, mm-hmm. you are community affected. Mm-hmm. And in front of 400,000 people, for Indigenous people to be at the forefront, I was like, it warms my heart, and mm-hmm. it's just so, I don't know. It's indescribable. And I really, like, I wish I had been there because it would have been so beautiful to be among other Indigenous people across the country and to advocate for not only myself, but my children and my children's children and the generations after that. And, you know, I want them to be able to breathe clean air and to not have to worry about whether or not the water that they're drinking is contaminated by uranium. Mm-hmm. Because that's something that affects my grandparents' home. You know, we mm-hmm. can't use any of the water at my grandpa's house because it is contaminated with uranium. Mm-hmm. You know, when the largest uranium spill that ever happened in the United States, it happened in Church Rock, and it went right past where my grandpa lives. And my grandpa remembers that day, and he told my mom that it was one of the worst moments. And this is what happens when we continue to pollute our planet. You can't even use the water. Mm-hmm. And so now, you know, my family we can't farm anymore. And it's just we can't farm because we're in a drought. We're in a drought because we're polluting. And it's just this continuance. Mm-hmm. and it's really affected my family. And it's just, this movement is really amazing and it's really powerful. And I hope that the momentum continues and just, yeah.
Thank you so much for sharing your story.
It is a spiritual fight.
Yeah,
I mean, it
is.
It's, you know, here in New Mexico, I think more than most places, we've got that connection spiritually to this work. Mm-hmm. I'm so glad you've talked about it in the way you have, because it is about our children and their futures, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it's really important to understand that the land is sacred. And, you know, being New Mexican, I think that's something that you learn early on, mm-hmm. is that the land is sacred. Mm-hmm. And just the spiritual meaning behind that.
But it's interesting, you were talking about the indigenous people being at the front of the march. And I thought that was actually one of the beautiful things about how the march was structured, was having, you know, there were five banners throughout the march, main sections. And the first was frontline communities. And it said, at the front line of the crisis, at the forefront of change. So recognizing that we actually have the solutions in our communities. There were young people of color and indigenous young people at the front, on the front banner. And then there were communities affected by Hurricane Sandy in the next one. And then the indigenous block, which was very big. It was a big indigenous delegation that supported them. So it was a really beautiful beginning part of the march. And then it just went on for blocks, just people of color, frontline communities from everywhere. And indigenous people from all over the world, too. And then there was labor, and they had a banner that said, we will build the future. Mm-hmm. And then there were the scientists who said, the debate is over. And then so it was just a really great moment. And then there was actually one moment where we stopped for 1 minute, yeah. and just were silent, and which was a really difficult thing to pull off. But the entire march, 400,000 people just were silent from 12:58 a.m. until 1 o'clock. Or it was 11:58, just before noon, and then they sounded this alarm, like the climate alarm, and it was just a really beautiful moment. So,
and why was there a moment of silence?
It was actually to honor the people that have died because of the climate crisis, the people that had passed away, and then that ended with the alarm going off and everybody setting off whatever noisemakers they had, and just to alert the world that we have to do something now. So,
and during the march, what would be the most memorable moment for each of you?
From the march, one of the most beautiful signs I saw was a sign with a woman who was pregnant, but her panza, her belly, was the earth. Mm-hmm. And next to it, it said, "Don't mess with our mama." Mm-hmm. I mean, that is. It's like, when are we going to protect what's sacred?
So this is kind of a funny one, but I got to kind of staff Michael as his media person, and we were there in the front of the march with the press riser right behind us and all the TV cameras from around the world, lots of media outlets, and also lots of VIPs. So, I mean, there was, like, you know, Senator Chuck Schumer from New York and Van Jones from the White House, Representative Keith Ellison, the chair of the Progressive Caucus. But my job, and it was kind of a cool calling that day, was to try and peel the media off those folks and to really get them to talk to the folks who are from the frontline communities. And Michael was one of those. He talked a lot about his experience growing up in Guam and the challenges that they're facing as a result of rising sea levels. So it was just really powerful, and a lot of the media were interested in that. And I think we accomplished a good amount. And there were, I think, six other spokespeople as well. And those are the stories I think that people need to hear about.
And what are some concrete actions that we can do?
The Alliance, the Climate Justice Alliance, we have this Our Power campaign, which is working to transition our economy from extreme or extractive energy and fossil fuels to local living economies. Southwest Organizing Project is a member of the campaign. So, and I think the work that SWAP is doing around food justice issues, about stopping developments like the one that Javier talked about, so stopping those projects that are bad, that are going to continue to contribute to climate change, and support those that are going to lead us towards real local living economies. I think that's the work that can happen now. And so I think supporting the work of Southwest Organizing Project and other groups that are doing similar work, I think, is really vital and something that people can start to do immediately.
And Javier?
Just like Michael was saying, we've got lots of local opportunities for people to engage with their fellow community members, and we've keep a running log of those on our website. So if you want to visit us, check out www.swop.net, and you'll get updates about all of our current campaigns and opportunities for being involved.
And Monica?
I mean, similarly, I got to kick it back to the local. I mean, you know, I come out of SWAP. I have a lot of love for that organization, and I think any opportunity that folks have to get involved in this work locally, throw down. There's a lot of excitement around some of this. So, you know, it's not just about, you know, the wonkiness of some of this. Sometimes it can feel that way, but there's, you know, community, the beauty of community organizations is they take a real creative approach to this work. And so there's opportunities to, you know, put your hands in the soil and do some gardening. There's opportunities to speak to, you know, your elected officials. There's opportunities to march. So, you know, whatever you're interested in, I can guarantee you that, you know, there's a local community organization in your area that is connected to work like that, and SWAP is definitely one of the ones. And, you know, also the Our Power campaign, folks should definitely check that out.
And also folks can go to our website, ourpowercampaign.org, and see a lot of photos from the march and video, and then also learn more about the campaign as well. So.
I want to thank you all for being here with us and talking with us about, you know, climate change and climate action. And I want to thank you guys for each sharing your perspectives and your point of views, especially about the next generation and really keeping the planet healthy for, you know, not only your kids, but their kids. And I think that's really powerful. So once again, Michael, Javier, Monica, thank you all for being here with us.
Thank you.
Thank you, Polly.
What really stuck with me from this discussion is that it's important to remember that the People's March is not just about preserving the physical aspects of our planet, but also about how the destruction of the Earth impacts us culturally and spiritually.
I agree. No matter who you are, your roots as a human being connect you to the Earth. Thank you, Monica Cordova, Michael Leon Guerrero, and Javier Benavides for joining us to talk about climate change.
Here with more music is Jocelyn Mendoza.
Selected by our guests, here we have Marvin Gaye, a soul singer who addressed controversial themes with his song, What's Going On, released in 1971.
Picket loud and picket sound. Don't punish me with brutality. Come on, talk to me so you can see what's going on.
Generation Justice's New York correspondent, Luna Olavarria Gallegos, also attended the People's Climate March.
Luna listened to some of the people who were there representing communities that have historically been marginalized. During the march, it was highlighting this diversity of people that made it successful.
Here are their stories.
This is what democracy looks like!
Tell me what democracy looks like!
This is what democracy looks like!
Last Sunday, over 300,000 people convened in New York City for the largest climate march of history. The People's Climate March brought together people from all over the country just a week before the United Nations Climate Summit to show solidarity for all environmental issues. What sets this march apart from others is its emphasis on indigenous solidarity and issues specific to people of color, immigrants, and people in developing countries. Fabiana Rodriguez, artist, activist, and co-founder of Culture Strike, had this to say.
Well, I think this is a really important moment for everyone to feel inspired and activate around climate change and then have a beginning to how it is that we're going to build a real climate movement that includes everyone, not just environmentalists, but what we call frontline communities, people who are most affected by climate change, poor people, people living in regions where there's a lot of fracking or there's a lot of oil extraction. So this is like a very powerful moment because it's really a test, a way for all of us to come together and begin to organize.
Although this march was unique in many perspectives based on gender and race issues, it is not the first of its kind. In 1991, the first National People of Color Environmental Leadership Summit was held in Washington, D.C., and, as one of the main points in its framework, emphasized how people of color are most impacted by environmental degradation. Today, the same struggles seem to be present. A native Filipina marching with the Indigenous Peoples Movement for Self-Determination and Liberation spoke about why it's important to center stories of people of color and Indigenous people.
The world knows and should know that the remaining forests and natural resources of the earth remain in Indigenous people's lands, in Indigenous people's territories. Why is that? Because for us Indigenous peoples, our lands, our territories, our natural resources, our lives. We cannot survive without this. That's why for centuries we have been nurturing these forests and these natural resources for future generations. Our indigenous practices of nurturing the land and the forest and natural resources is in itself a great contribution to addressing climate change issues.
Throughout the march, there were different blocks of people representing specific communities all marching together. One group, with people in solidarity with immigrants, focused their art, chants, and overall message around how we must find a solution to climate change because we share this world.
We're working with a group of indigenous migrants who are making a statement about global citizenship, like the idea that migration is a natural thing. People have moved all across this globe and set up homes and civilizations for themselves, and people should really respect the fact that, you know, this world belongs to all of us.
Ithaca College student Imani Hall was one of thousands of students present on Sunday. At the march, many from all over the country had come with a purpose to build solidarity around their divestment goals at their university or college. Imani spoke briefly about what the climate march meant to him.
I'm hoping that the UN will be able to see that through this march and through other marches across the country and across the world, that this is all about love. I feel like there's a lot of stigma when it comes to like environmental movements and things like that. But I feel like it's all just, you know, love for people, love for nature. And so I hope that they can see that.
And now, the United Nations is in the midst of the summit. On Thursday, UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon said, climate change is a defining issue of our times, urging the body that now is the time for action. At the climate march, I spoke to a man with Nipponzon Nyoho-ji, a Buddhist lineage with deep ties to natives here. He gave some advice for a way to decolonize the way we see climate change and climate justice.
The Six Nations, their belief is that every decision they make has to be considered seven generations and ahead. So obviously we don't have that in our culture because we only think about instant gratification. So if we could incorporate just a simple thing like that, the world would change.
What we should remember from this interview is that the leaders of this movement are the indigenous population, who can teach us a lot about how to love and care for the environment.
Thank you, Luna Olaveria Gallegos and her co-producer, Erica Moriarty, for sharing the voices from the People's Climate March.
Here's Jocelyn Mendoza with some more music.
To quote our next song, it takes one dream, one voice, one heart and one world to make a change. Here is We Stand Together by Faith Rivera and Harl Payne.
One world, one dream, one voice, one heart, one world.
Now here's Pilar Monfiletto and Carson Lafferty with our Generation Justice Community Calendar.
Good evening, everyone. It's time for Generation Justice's Community Calendar. I'm your calendar host, Carson Lafferty.
And I'm your other calendar host, Pilar Monfiletto. Tonight we'll be sharing with you some upcoming events.
Here at Generation Justice, We work to inspire youth to make a positive change and to show that their voices do matter in the community.
That is true, especially when it comes to education, because that is one very important pathway for their future.
This Tuesday, September 30th, at the UNM Student Union Building in the Santa Ana A and B Room, there will be an academic presentation and a panel called Exclusion Masked as Excellence. This panel will discuss the continued practices of keeping students of color out of the university.
The time of this event will be from 1 to 3 p.m. It will go over some of the current trends that exclude people of color from higher education, as well as some of the consequences of GPA requirements and the other changes to the lottery scholarship.
Supporters and sponsors include the New Mexico Coalition for Equity and Justice, RASA Graduate Student Association, and LASE New Mexico, El Centro de la Raza, and many more.
As the daughter of an educator, and as a high school student myself, education has always played a huge role in my life.
You know, Pilar, education is also one of the South Valley Male Involvement Project's core values.
And on Sunday, October 5th, the South Valley Male Involvement Project will be holding a CD release party for the music artists AGD and DJ M. Martinez at the Ghost Flame Grill in downtown Albuquerque.
It's all ages from 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. and a 21 and up from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. If you'd like to know more information, you can contact Carlos at 505-804-1411.
Carson, I know you're a big flamenco dance and music enthusiast.
Oh yeah, what gave it away? My fancy footwork and dance moves here in the studio. But speaking of dance and music, the National Hispanic Cultural Center and Casa Flamenca present Tecari by Jesus Muñoz Flamenco.
In the Gypsy language of Kalo, Tecari means free, as in the state of being free, and not under control or power of one another. That is why flamenco dance is so influential. Mm.
This will be showing for two nights in a row, Friday, October 3rd at 8 p.m., and then Saturday, right after that, October 4th at 9:30 p.m.
We also have some upcoming events at the Albuquerque Civic Plaza.
There will be a hearing about the County Planning Commission's proposed Santalina Master Plan.
This event concerns the undeveloped land in western Albuquerque. Currently, there is 13,700 acres of undeveloped land that the master plan is proposing to use for residential, commercial, industrial, and urban use.
This will be on Wednesday, October 1st, from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. at the City Council Chambers in City Hall 1.
Another event at the Civic Plaza will be the World Homeless Day Gathering.
Homelessness is a serious issue in our country. Currently, there are over 633,000 homeless people in the United States. And in Albuquerque alone, there are over 3,500 people living on the streets.
ABQ Cares for All, ACFA, works to raise awareness about homelessness and advocates for people who are experiencing homelessness in Albuquerque.
ABQ Cares for All is hosting the World Homeless Day Gathering on Saturday, October 11th, from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. at the Civic Plaza. For more information, you can visit their Facebook page by searching for ABQ Cares for All.
From music to dance to education and civic engagement, this was our Generation Justice Community Calendar for tonight. I'm your calendar host, Pilar Monfoletto.
And I'm your other calendar host on this beautiful evening, Carson Lafferty. Now back to Jazzaline for some music.
Going green not only is good for us, but will benefit future generations. This song, Go Green, by the Crew Girl Order explains the great impact of going green and saving our world.
Keep smiling. Profit, profit is all they know. The ozone layer is about to go. Cutting down the trees, now our kids can't breathe. Asthma is now classified as a disease. Telling us these stories and the lies that they feed us. Thinking it's a secret, now you really need us. God made heaven and earth, not man. Let's change it where we think and do what we can.
Come on everybody, let's save the world. Like go, go, go green. This is for our future, every boy and girl. Like go, go, go green.
We've reached the end of our special program on the climate movement. Thank you all for joining us.
We'd like to thank Monica Cordova, Javier Benavides, and Michael Leon Guerrero for speaking with us about the Climate Change March.
Thanks to Luna Olaveria Gallegos and Eric Moriarty for the interviews in the march.
And thanks to Christina Rodriguez for producing this week's show. Production assistance by Roberto Rael, George Luna Pena, and Melissa Harris. Also, shout out to Camarilla Umi and Chantel Trujillo for editing and engineering tonight.
Much appreciation to all of our youth media makers here at Generation Justice. We wouldn't be the same without you.
Stay connected with us. Check out our website, generationjustice.org, where you can listen to all of our past shows, see music playlists, read blogs, watch videos, and much, much more.
We're also active on social media, so like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter and Instagram.
Generation Justice is funded by the W.K. Kellogg Foundation, with additional funding from the McCune Foundation and, of course, all of you, who have contributed to our project by visiting our website and clicking Donate. I'm your host, Maya Quiñones.
And I'm your other host, Danny Kessner. Jaslyn will end the show with a few more songs. Then, following KUNM is spoken word.
We'll see you next Sunday at 7 o'clock. Until then, go green and keep it clean.
Closing off with Changes Needed by Dream Reborn. After, we'll have Mother Nature Needs Us by PJ Grand Band. And to close the night, we'll have The Shadow by Sandal. I'm your music host, Jasleen Mendoza. Have a wonderful night.
My weather powerful. We got a problem solved, so we can get high and low.